If you want to bring your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Sapiens.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapiens Show 186. We're going to entitle the show Foundations because we're going to talk about entertainment. About every other episode, I think Matt and I have talked entertainment, and I think it's a good thing to talk about since right now there's a lot of shows to watch, new shows, old shows. I want to start off with, I know Matt hasn't watched this, but the new Foundation show on Apple TV, based on Isaac Asimov's Foundation series of books. It's incredibly, incredibly well done, with really high production values. I don't know if you've watched any of it yet. My only issue is that I think people, it could confuse people. And the thing is the books are this way too. From a chapter to chapter, there is a timeline that goes on. And they skip, 30 years, 50 years, in the timeline. Now, the show hasn't been skipping that far ahead. It's been like 20-year increments or whatever. But the show is episodic because of that. So you have this grand story, which is the foundation. But from episode to episode, you might not encounter the same characters for more than an episode or two, because there's, at least in the first, there's only been three episodes out, but in the first three episodes, the first episode you have kind of the main character who created Cyclohistory, which is this data analytics solution to predict what, in the grand scheme of things, whether empires rise and fall, and even it can get pretty specific, meaning it can't tell you the details, but it can tell you that you're going to have a crisis at this point in time. Like 50 years from now, you're going to have a crisis that you're going to have to handle. And in the book, the character Harry Seldon, who's the psychohistorian, he's a mathematician who created Psychohistory using data analytics, on the anniversary of his death, he had recorded all of these future holo recordings of himself to come back and say, and he would, so just to prove to people what was going on, he would give a little bit of detail, not tell them much, because if he gave them too much detail, they could, change the mathematics and screw everything up. But in the show, he's only in the first two episodes, and then he's dead. And by the third episode, most of the people who were in the first two episodes are dead, because enough time has passed that, and so you're kind of picking up every two or three episodes, it's possible to pick up a new set of characters. Again, we're only three episodes in. It may slow down a little bit. But the way they've created the series, this could be an epic series. It could run 10, 15 seasons if they wanted it to.
My fear with something like that is that you're not going to care about any of these characters, because they're not going to last more than an episode or two.
Well, you care about the Harry Seldon character in the first... And there's a couple other characters you care about in the first two episodes. My problem with it is that those characters have like a two episode story arc, and then they're gone. So I was invested in them, and now.
But that's my point. First of all, character development in two episodes is not enough. Particularly with an ensemble cast.
Well, that's the thing, is the ensemble cast changes over time. But you're right.
That's my point. I mean, if you've got like one character, then, yeah, you could probably do that.
Well, they concentrate on one character. In reality, the first two episodes were not about Harry Seldon. They were really about this girl who... They've Starbucked a couple of characters. So one of the characters they Starbucked was a character named Gale Dornick. So in the book, he's a man. In the show, they made him a teenage girl. But they did it in such a way that it really didn't matter. That one I didn't mind so much. But in the third episode, Salvor Hardin, who was the first mayor of the foundation of the planet Terminus, where the foundation exists, one, they Starbucked him, and so it's a woman. And I'm not saying I dislike the character. I immensely like the character that they've done. But it is not the same character that Salvor Hardin was in the book. So if you're a fan of the books, you're going to notice some of these discrepancies. Now, I can understand why they did it. And actually, I mean, changing a character from male to female, that's solely from a diversity perspective. That's like making the character gay or... making them some an ethnicity that they weren't originally, but in the Foundation universe, everybody's kind of a mixed ethnicity. So it doesn't really matter what ethnicity they are, but in some respects, it does matter whether they're male or female. And so, like Salvor Hardin, not only is a woman in this show, but Salvor Hardin isn't the mayor. Salvor Hardin is the protector, kind of the game warden for the planet that protects the settlement. So, similar in function, but her father ends up playing the mayor, which I don't quite get, because there was a big issue. In the book, that's a big deal about Salvor Hardin and some of the scientists who run the foundation, because there was a shift of power that went from the figurehead mayor of the city, who was not in control of anything, but the encyclopedists, who were the chief scientists of the foundation, were in control, and Salvor Hardin switched that. but, so I want to see how this plays out. And I'm hoping that, you know, maybe that this idea that the characters were only in it for a certain period of time is just a, you know, was in the first couple of episodes. And one of the characters, Gale Dornick, ends up being launched into space after the end of the second episode in cryosleep. So there is the possibility that Gale Dornick might come back later in the series, but as far as the entertainment value and the quality of it is, it's been very, very good. And they followed, kind of like Psycho History, they followed the greater plot points so far.
My struggle with stuff like this is, as a studio or production company...
Well, and here's the kicker. So
you buy the property and then you change things.
Yeah. Well, and I will say this. So I actually wish they had... I think I've said this before on many of our podcasts when we've talked about Isaac Asimov. Isaac Asimov, every book and short story he wrote fits in this universe. So it starts from iRobot and goes all the way to Foundation and Empire. I don't know, there's 60 or 70 books. There's probably a couple hundred short stories. And you don't realize, unless you're a real Isaac Asimov fan and you've read almost everything, which I have since I was like 10 years old, you don't realize it until you get to the end of Foundation Empire. And they wrap it up with characters from iRobot. And because of that, I think they should have actually started back with iRobot instead of Foundation. And done, just walked through the whole thing.
See, now this, the reason why they don't do that is the same reason why George Lucas started with episode 4.
True. Well, of course, iRobot and all that could be spinoffs, you know? Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I get it. I mean, and you got to pick a place to start, too. And Foundation is a solid place to start. Because the way he wrote the books, even in the Foundation series, you can pick up any of the books and start there. And, I mean, that's how well written it was all put together. And I don't know if... And the funny thing is a lot of the books and short stories were written out of sequence. And so, I wonder, you know, he's been dead since 87 or 88. Because he was... I think he died after the first season of Star Trek The Next Generation because he was the technical consultant for Next
Gen. Was technical advisor for Star Trek The Motion Picture. And he and Gene butted heads so bad. If he were asked to come back for Next Gen, I'd have been shocked.
Let me see. Let's go to the magic god of the internet.
But while you're doing that, I will say there's a certain level of hubris.
So he died in 92.
Wow. A certain level of hubris upon those writing the teleplay.
There is.
When you are an accomplished writer like Isaac Asimov, there are things that you just... You can't just switch it up because it works better on television.
Yeah.
That's my fear with a project like this. Yeah, yeah. These guys are not Isaac Asimov.
No, they're not. They're not. But so far, I've been happy with it. The other thing I was impressed with is at least they got a real production company. So Skydance is actually doing the series.
They're affiliated. Well, my beef with Skydance is the affiliation with Bad Robot, which is the affiliation with J.J. Abrams.
Mm-hmm.
That's my problem with Skydance.
So let's talk about the other big announcement, which I don't know how to take this, and I've read several interviews now, but... J. Michael Straczynski is bringing back Babylon 5. And in an interview in the last couple of days, he has said that... And I will say this, because I didn't realize this, so I was talking with somebody else about it over the weekend, and I looked it up. So, about seven, since they did the show... About seven of the main cast members have died. So, yeah.
Garibaldi's dead.
Yeah, Garibaldi.
Zach Sinclair, Allen's dead. Sinclair's dead. Mira Furlan is dead.
Dr. Franklin. He died at age 44. He was the first one to die.
Peter Jurassic and Jakar. Jakar is dead too.
So seven. So they can't. You know, he said, "Hey, I can't bring back." You know, the cast, and let's do, because a lot of people were saying, well, why don't you do a Babylon 5, The Next Generation, you know?
And, why not?
And I still think his argument is spurious. He said, well, you know, most of the cast is dead, so you could bring back Sheridan, but they also pigeonholed Sheridan's character in the show by making him president, and that's why when they did the spinoff at Crusade, he wasn't even in the show at all.
Yeah. Although he was referred to, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, he was referred to a lot. So, but he also said in his interview, he goes, well, I can't tell the same story over again because that would be boring.
Of course.
So, but...
Yet somehow that works for Battlestar Galactica.
I know. So we're going to have the same characters. You know, we're going to have a Sheridan, and I don't know if he's going to go with Sinclair... we're going to have Jakar and Londo Malari and all these people. Oh, Stephen First was also another one who died.
Yeah.
So about the only two I think who are alive from the main cast. Well, there's three. The woman who played Talia Winters,
Patricia something or other.
Yeah, John Sheridan, which is
Bruce Boxleitner.
Bruce Boxleitner, Melissa Gilbert's husband, and Billy Mummy is still alive.
Claudia Christian's still alive.
And Claudia Christian's still alive. Yeah. Everybody else on the show didn't hold a main character position for any of the seasons.
I think even the Human Ranger dude died.
Yeah, I think he did too. I mean, it's a huge number of people. Now, the interesting thing about it is this time, you know, Babylon 5 was a groundbreaking show when it came out because most of it was CGI, which cut the production cost, which allowed them to actually have some real actors come in. And they also, you know, they brought in people who, with the exception of Bruce Boxleitner in the second season, they were able to hire high-quality actors and actresses, but they were not, like, Hollywood A-star. You know, like, Mira Furlan was a stage actress, really well-known stage actress in Europe, in Eastern Europe.
But you can do that with the alien characters.
Yes. Yes. But even the guy who played Jeffrey Sinclair, he was he had a little bit of Shatner to him, but not, he was not overly Shatner. So, but you know, I want to see the show because think about the vision that he had when he did the show with the old school CGI, which when I watch it today is really hokey with what he's going to have, but also he's got the power of a studio behind him. J. Michael Stravinsky, when he did the original Babylon 5, did it out of his own back pocket, you know?
He George Lucas the hell out of that show.
Yeah.
I got very strong mixed emotions on this one.
I do too. Well, and I think part of my strong mixed emotions is because, you know, they've talked about rebooting Battlestar Galactica again.
And they will.
Which makes no sense because the previous Battlestar Galactica is probably as good as it will ever get. Even though they, you know, hence why we say they Starbucked somebody or boomered somebody, you know.
The Starbucking was bad enough. What they did to Boomer is criminal.
Yeah, Boomer and Athena. Well, they made Boomer and Athena the same person. But that being said, the show was still really good.
It was.
You know, Baltar was... You hate him, but you love to hate him. And you love the character.
I tend to think of him as an anti-hero rather than a villain.
I do too.
Because things just happen to Gaius.
Yes.
You know, it's not like he has... The original Baltar made a conscious decision.
Correct.
To be a traitor.
Correct. Gaius Baltar in the second one was really manipulated into being a traitor.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I agree. It, you know, for every show like Foundation, I'm curious why they want to reboot everything else. You know,
well, because there are shows that worked. There's reasons why we keep hearing, like, hey, we're going to redo Firefly. Right around every April 1st, we hear about a reboot of Firefly. It's a show that worked, that was original. But really, that's the last show that I can recall that was truly original, and even that's got smatterings of...
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is everybody's trying to do Star Trek. And with the exception of the 2009 Kelvin Timeline movies, the J.J. Trek stuff, Star Trek's done a good job of filling in the history. They haven't gone back and tried to reboot, you know, with new actors. And I think that's part of the reason, too, why the J.J. besides the continuity issues, which...
But that's my problem with this Babylon 5 reboot.
Correct. Is there, in reality, what he should do is, instead of it being Babylon 5, why didn't it be Babylon 3? Or...
12,
yeah. Something else, you know. A different set of characters, you know, and knowing that, hey, because we knew all the Babylon stations except 5 were destroyed, you know, it gets you to the point where they destroy the show. I mean, it'd be great to do it with the Earth-Minbari War and how the Vorlons helped out and you know, introduce those characters. And again, like Star Trek, fill in the space. Star Wars, to a large degree. Why are they successful? Well, with the exception of the last three movies, because they've been filling in the space. They've expanded the universe. They're not...
The reason why J. Michael Straczynski won't do it is because Crusade failed. Had Crusade survived and got a second season, I think he'd be more willing to do it.
Well, yeah. Well, again, part of the problem with Crusade is they pigeonholed that story to, if they didn't in 5 years figure out, you know, a cure, then everybody on Earth was going to die.
That's just bad writing.
It was a bad concept.
Everybody talks about how J. Michael Straczynski is some, like, modern genius, but I don't find him to be that particularly astute. You don't make a mistake like that after...
Well, and Babylon 5 had issues, too. Not the first three seasons, but seasons 4 and 5 sucked. They did. The bringing in the, you know, creating the Rangers and all this. And then on top of having the Rangers, which were part of season of Crusade, they then had the Technomages and all those. And it's like, dude, we're trying to take D&D and put it in with...
Now, I like Galen.
Don't get me... I like Galen as a character.
Galen is probably my favorite character on that show. Which is saying a lot, because I like Gary Cole.
Yeah.
As Matthew Gideon. But Galen is probably my favorite character.
Yeah.
And that was a breakout role for Daniel Day-Kim.
It was. I think that was the first time he was...
Is that his introduction?
Yeah. Is interesting. I mean, I've been rewatching some of the old stuff. I'll tell you, Stargate Atlantis. I mean, I loved Stargate. You know, I thought the original movie was great, and I also liked it, even though they had to recast O'Neill.
That they kept that continuity was important.
Yeah, they kept continuity. That the show wasn't a rehash of the movie on TV. It was a new, you know, it was a continuation. But I'm like more than halfway through the third season of Atlantis at this point. Because the problem is
I like Atlantis. Atlantis is my favorite Stargate series.
I think it is mine as well. They Atlantis fixed the formula.
Yes.
You know, and so they were able to get a cast. They had the concept, which they tried to redo with Stargate Universe. They tried to essentially copy Atlantis with a slightly different premise, you know, so that they would be isolated from the SGC and everything else. But they didn't have... The writing wasn't bad, because I've watched most of that over again, too. There were just some continuity problems, because there's way... It started in Atlantis, unfortunately, but... It didn't affect Atlantis because they were stuck out in the Pegasus Galaxy. But, you know, there were all of these issues with, you had the Goa'uld on one end, and then you had, you know, the Wraith on the Atlantis end. And other than that one episode where the colonel who's in charge of the Daedalus was infected by a Goa'uld, but then Hermes, the Asgard, figured out how to remove it using the transporter. That's really, other than that, in him being in that episode as a Goa'uld, there was no, it was just mentioned a couple times. But that was a big premise point with Universe. And the thing is they're in some other, they're in between galaxies, you know, in this ancient starship, and they're dealing with an enemy who is in the Milky Way, you know.
Yeah. And I felt like the way they brought them on board was contrived.
Yes. Yeah, the base, the planet had enough power to let them dial this thing, and then the Goa'uld attack, so it forced them to evacuate through the gate, and they didn't know where they were going, and I mean, it's... So... Yeah, I'm with you there. But I thought it was well done.
I had a hard time picking a favorite character on Universe. It's one of the few shows that I'm like, there's some aspect I like about all these characters, but there's some aspect that I loathe about all of these characters. There wasn't anybody that, well, Eli, I guess, that you were like, I really like this character. But even Eli got a little annoying.
Yeah. I mean, the only character who, and I don't dislike the character, but, you know, I don't have, is Ronan Dex. So Jason Momoa's character.
Now we're talking Atlantis.
Yeah, on Atlantis. I love Joe Flanagan as Shepard, and I like Tori Higginson as Dr. Ware, and I like Rodney McKay, and I like...
I even like the kid that...
Lieutenant Ford?
Yes.
Yeah, I did too until they sent him off, and then I'd like get him off the show. I don't want to see him anymore. I liked...
They ruined him.
I really liked the other doctor, Carson.
Carson Beckett.
Yeah. And of course, you know, it's just that team, and because the way they had the charisma of... the originals, you know, Daniel and O'Neill and Carter and Teal'c, you know, on SG-1. But it was very, you can see the SG-1 influence into Atlantis, because instead of Teal'c, you had Tayla, you know. Shepard and O'Neill, Jackson and McKay, Carter and Carson. I also like the Colonel Carter and McKay, you know, his fantasies about her and everything. That I love that. That made the character part of the character, you know.
Well, McKay showed up in SG-1 a couple of times.
Yes, yes.
You know, so when it comes time to do a spin-off, McKay's kind of like O'Brien and or Worf.
Or whatever his name was in the leader of the Genii. You know, Cole Meany was the leader of the Genii in Atlantis.
Well, no, what I'm getting at is that you take a character that you've invested a little background in.
Correct.
And elevate him.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, the other thing that was... So, you know, Daniel Jackson had a level of arrogance But it was tempered. And they let it go with Rodney McKay, which was awesome. And one of the best episodes is when his sister figures out that... you know.
The fact that his name isn't Rodney McKay, it's Meredith. Yep. That's the beauty of that episode.
Exactly. I mean, the writing was real well. It's the way people would actually treat each other, you know? People who ended up knowing each other well. So.
But that, bringing this back to Babylon 5. There you had a really good cast that was reasonably well written and reasonably well executed. There's no reason not to do a Next Generation. You still have the ability to bring back a Lanier.
Correct.
Or Ivanova. Or Sheridan.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is they
You don't have to bring everybody back.
They could either just take the easy escape route of we solved the problem and so we saved, you know, Crusader, the Excalibur saved humanity, Gary Cole's crew, and let it go with that. Or they could do the hard way, which would be more interesting, and have the population of Earth wiped out. And so it's the remnants who lived in the rest of the system, you know, on the Mars colony and, you know, the Earth Force.
Even that would be interesting.
Exactly. Exactly.
A total reboot where you're just going to tell a whole new story just with the same characters.
Well, they could even bring even Gary Cole back.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. There's no reason not to do these things.
Yeah.
You still have Tracy Scoggins is still alive.
Yep.
Well, as far as I know, there's no reason not to do that.
Yep. Yep. I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. So let's move on to the next show I want to talk about, because we finally, after years of waiting, got a release date.
That we did.
For what show am I talking about?
Strange New Worlds.
No.
You've got to be talking about Strange New Worlds.
Nope, I'm not talking about Strange New
Worlds. Really? Well, what else is...
This new show called The Orville New Horizons.
No.
It's going to premiere March 10th of 2022.
That it is.
Nearly 3 years after its season... The season finale of its sophomore season.
I have mixed feelings on it now. When Orville was on air, the only Star Trek we had was
Discovery,
and it was behind an idiotic paywall. It still is. And, it was a way to live vicariously.
Yeah. Now...
I don't know that I need that anymore.
I know. Well, the other thing is it was... If they had continued it and resolved it, like, in the season opener of the next season, this alternate universe, which is a well-used Star Trek trope,
yeah,
like, so well-used that we have a whole series of movies on it, we have whole episodes, we have... Who's to say that Discovery 900 years in the future is still the same timeline as Picard is? And Picard Season 2! Another alternate universe. Because of our good friend Q. So... you know, the again, like you said, this better be really good. But it also better be resolved relatively quickly, in my opinion. It's not one that I think needs to continue on and on and on and on.
Well, there's reasons why they're subtitling it now.
Yes. Because it's an alternate universe.
And I think this is going to be where they are.
Yeah.
Going forward. I hate to say that, but...
Well, the only bright side of it is Norm Macdonald.
Yeah.
Is going to be, this will be his last act as Lieutenant Yaffet in the show. Because he passed away since, which is kind of bad. But everybody else is back. And there's some weird... the other thing that I think is annoying that Hulu's going to do, now they do this with a lot of their shows, so it's not out of character, but they're, you know, it's going to be released weekly like it's a television series.
I struggle with that.
I do. I mean, that's the way Apple TV does their shows, and obviously Paramount Plus does their shows, and stuff, but...
I prefer the Hulu method. Drop it all at once. Let me binge it.
You mean the Netflix method?
Yes, that's what I meant.
So one of the other things, speaking of Star Trek, is Picard's already got a season 3 renewal, and we haven't seen season 2 yet.
That was expected.
Yeah.
Mainly because Patrick's getting up there in age.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. If they want to run it for more than at least 2 seasons, they need to... But we knew that was happening, too, because they went directly into production after season 2 was complete. They had a couple-week hiatus, and then they went back to production.
Which is, for me, a struggle for the writing staff. My fear is... we're not going to get as good a story. Not that I've been super enthused with the story Picard's given us thus far.
Yeah, in my opinion, with the exception of the... I mean, don't get me wrong. It's entertaining.
There have been some really good moments.
Yes.
That I'm really happy and pleased with.
But to be honest... With the exception of the resolution of the burn in the last season of Discovery, I think... as far as story goes, overall, Picard is the weakest story. But it does make sense in a certain aspect.
The best parts of Picard, I've gotten the same emotional payoff from the callbacks in Lower Decks.
Yes. I agree with you. And I forgot to turn that off a second time. But that's okay. No, I agree with you. You know, one of the best parts of Lower Decks is all the Easter eggs and the shout outs and callbacks, you know, from that show. And you get a lot of those warm and fun Star Trek feelings from that.
Lower Decks has really kind of grown on me. And I'm predisposed to hate cartoons, you know that.
Yes. Although you did like the original Star Trek animated series.
I did, but that's because it wasn't trying to be something else.
True. Very true. So, we actually don't have a release date for Strange New Worlds, other than it's going to be in 2022. Now, we assume, since... We're in the middle of Lower Decks. November 18th, the fourth season of Discovery starts. Season 2 of Picard will probably be early. Well, we know that it's February of... it's February of 2022. So that means they're going to fit Strange New Worlds in there because Lower Decks will then start again after Strange New Worlds. It's that Alex Kurtzman's, you know, Star Trek 365 a year.
Which is great.
It is great. Well, I'll tell you, Paramount and Alex Kurtzman and Akiva Goldsman and you know, that crew that works for Alex, they've done a good job providing the fans something year-round. And not only have they done a good job of...
I will say this, though. I wish they'd bring back Short Treks.
I wish they'd bring back short treks too. I think that was a great way to introduce other things, you know, add to the story in between the series and things like that. And but, you know,
and they don't even have to be series related.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's, but I think that their intention is to bring those back. It's just, as they've been trying to figure out production, you know, that's, that would be the short one on my list, literally.
But that one should be one of the easier ones to pull off in a COVID world.
Well, and they should be able to do some short treks with the Lower Decks and Prodigy stuff, because that's all animated, so...
Problem with the animated stuff is that it takes even longer than the normal productions, time-wise.
It can. But the animated stuff, part of the beauty of it is, you know,
there are no actors actually taking place
The people
time.
Who are animating, because it's all computer animation today, they don't even have to be in Hollywood. As a matter of fact, they're not. Most of them are scattered across the United States.
I don't have a problem with that, but what I'm getting at is that if the future of television is animated, we're in trouble.
Oh, I agree. And I don't think that's the case. At least not until the point where our deep fakes are so good.
Well, that's my next point. Yeah. I mean, really, if they would get better at... And this stuff is getting better. The technology is getting better.
Well, it's kind of funny you bring up deepfakes. So, you know, there was a kid. So at the end of Mandalorian Season 2, you know, Disney did a deepfake to bring Mark Hamill as Luke's. He actually played the part, but then they
de-aged him with
And then there was a kid who de-aged him even better and put his thing up on YouTube using equipment at home. Well, Disney did the right thing and they hired the kid.
Yeah.
And so that kid should be helping them make that better.
Absolutely.
And there, you know, that kid wasn't the only one who was making good deepfakes. So that technology can only get better over time. And I mean, when I say over time, a short amount of time, we're going to see leaps and bounds. So it would be possible that you could take no names and have them physically act out scenes and then deepfake a real actor over them.
Any actor. I mean, there's... This has already been done. I mean, Orson Welles showed up in Sky Captain in The World of Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that dude's been dead for...
Forever.
But that's what I'm talking about. Those are the kinds of technologies that will get better, and as they get better, that will be applied to television.
Yeah.
And it all just gets better.
True. But what, you know, it's kind of funny, what we call television today is not television.
Yeah, it really isn't.
It's streamed. I don't, my TV has a tuner in it, and I do have an antenna hooked to it for those strange times when I need weather information and the internet's off.
Facebook's down, because that never happens.
Yeah. And, but, you know, I don't watch over-the-air TV at all anymore. And,
I do only because I'm paying for it as part of my rent.
I don't have cable television. And, you know, it's kind of funny where I live. I live out in the country, oddly enough. But the city that we live next to, and technically our address is part of the city, even though I don't live in the city limits, they've taken some of that federal money and they're putting fiber in. And you take that and you take Starlink, and you take Verizon's Get 5G home internet. You know, all of these things are increasing the amount of internet you can get and competing with the cable company. I bet in 2 years I don't have cable. I'm leaning towards the Verizon Get 5G because I do get 5G at my farm. I have a new iPhone and I get 5G on it. I don't think they're ready to add the internet service, the home internet, to the 5G infrastructure that's out there, and that's why it's not available in my area or at my mom's house, which is a few miles north. But it's, I looked it up. Their service is twice as fast for less money. For $20 less a month, their service is twice as fast as what I'm getting now. And if the power goes out, my internet doesn't go out. Because I'm not tied to a cable line. The fiber optic, I doubt if the power goes out, internet goes away. And that'll even be faster than the Verizon. Starlink is not quite as fast as what I'm getting at the moment. But it will get faster as they put more satellites up in the constellation. And that's the only reason I haven't switched it. Because, again, if the power goes out, you know, because somebody knocked a power pole down or the line got hit by a tree limb, it doesn't affect your internet service. And, you know, and that, I, that because that, that's what I don't understand about the rural internet thing, because in the infrastructure bill, because Starlink is already there, because they're not in beta anymore. They're in full production. Verizon 5G is going to get there. And, you know, other commercial things have come to fill in that gap and to make it competitive. So who knows? You know, your local cable company, whether they're like, I pay for Xfinity in Alabama for my daughter, and I pay for Spectrum at home. You know, when they have or have more competition, they're going to either up their game or they're going to go out of business. You know, and upping your game means either make it cheaper, have better customer service, make it faster. You know, pick three.
I look forward to the day that cable companies are gone. I'm not real wild about the cell phone companies taking it over.
Well, I think that part of that was inevitable, but at least there's choice, you know. Now, I don't know what AT&T's plans are because, you know, AT&T being a... We broke up Ma Bell, and then we let AT&T reform out of Ma Bell, or all of the other Ma Bells, because they bought them all back up. I don't know what their plans are, you know, because they've been selling DSL. That was, you know, that was their big thing. It was AT&T DSL because they own the telephone infrastructure versus cable, and that was your choice. And cable by far was the superior technology. But the AT&T's not allowing new people. Well, one, they quit manufacturing the DSL modems, so they're not signing up any new subscribers. They do have like a deal with HughesNet for satellite internet because they own one of the dish companies. But those are going out of business too, because people aren't consuming TV like they were. They would rather go to pay the money and get Paramount Plus and HBO Max and never worry about a commercial again because they're paying for it, and it's still cheaper than cable, which is being subsidized by commercials, you know. And people's viewing habits have changed too. Even though Paramount Plus and
That point right there is why I dislike the over-the-air model that the streaming services are emulating.
But that's what I'm saying, though, is what's happening is even though those services do the week-to-week on a new thing because it caters to a certain demographic, a lot of people wait until the season is over and then go watch the whole thing, you know?
The bad part about that is you have to avoid your friends who are watching it.
Yes. Yes. But if they're real friends, they won't tell you. I never tell you. But, you know, that's the thing. Because one of the big things that's been going on is Nielsen has been having fits because, one, nobody's watching over-the-air TV, which is what Nielsen's system is set up to monitor. And so, and the streaming companies aren't necessarily giving Nielsen the data. They're actually charging Nielsen for the data for how many people are streaming the info.
And so, why shouldn't they?
I don't see why they shouldn't either.
Nielsen should go the way that Dodo, when the cable companies do. I have no problem with that. What purpose do they serve? Is setting ad prices?
Yeah.
Who needs that in a streaming world?
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and it's happened so long now that, you know, again, who, when you watch over-the-air TV, who's advertising? I'll tell you, even though I'm getting older, it's certainly not me. You know, hey, if you've been, it's either ambulance chasers, medicine for geriatric diseases, or life insurance for geriatrics. It is. There's no, you don't see commercials for toothpaste, and you don't see commercials for toys for kids, and you know, like you used to see. You don't even see car commercials. Occasionally, there'll be a local dealership will do a commercial, but you don't see Ford doing a commercial for the F-150, or you don't see Dodge doing a commercial for Ram trucks, or General Motors doing a commercial for Corvette like you would in the past. You know where those ads go? They're on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, where people are actually stuck watching ads.
Yeah.
So, well,
special events aside.
Yes. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up there. Please send us some feedback to gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
You've been listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.